Life Talk Radio presents Health and Longevity, the program dedicated to bringing you cutting-edge information and interviews that can change your life. On each edition, nutritionist, registered dietitian, and board-certified anti-aging health practitioner, Dr. John Westerdahl, will show you how to achieve a longer, healthier life using the latest breakthroughs in nutrition, wellness, and lifestyle medicine. And now, here's your host, Dr. John Westerdahl.
Welcome to Health and Longevity. I'm Dr. John Westerdahl. On today's program, we will talk with Dr. Skip McCarty, a clergyman and leading authority on stress management. Dr. McCarty will tell us how stress affects our health and longevity, and he will offer practical strategies on how to manage stress in our daily lives. But before we get into today's exciting topic, let's hear the latest research and news affecting our health and longevity today.
Dr. Westerdahl presents the Health and Longevity News and Research Update, bringing you the most pertinent and important information about your health and longevity.
Well, vitamin B6 and vitamin B12 may protect against depression in older adults. A recent study published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition examined the long hypothesized link between depression and B vitamin deficiency. Scientists from Rush University Medical Center in Chicago, Illinois, examined the diet and supplement questionnaires of 3,503 adults aged 65 or older. The focus of the examination was on vitamin B6, vitamin B12, and folic acid intake. Now, the scientists controlled for the use of depressants, age, race, and other variables, and they found that for each additional 10 milligrams of vitamin B6 and 10 micrograms of vitamin B12 derived both from food and supplements was associated with a 2% reduction per year in the odds of developing symptoms of depression. Food intake alone was not associated with a lower risk of depressive symptoms. Now, these results support the scientific hypothesis that high total intakes of vitamins B6 and B12 are protective of depressive symptoms over time. Here's a study that shows a good reason for being nuts about walnuts. Walnuts pack a more potent, heart-healthy punch than other nuts. Now, you sprinkle some walnuts on your salad this evening because your heart will thank you. When it comes to heart health benefits, roasted and raw walnuts rule the roost, a new study shows. Researchers from the University of Scranton in Scranton, Pennsylvania, compared the amount of powerful antioxidants called polyphenols in 9 types of roasted and raw nuts and 2 types of peanut butter. They also tested just how effective the antioxidants in the nuts are in regard to heart health using lab analysis. A clear winner emerged from the nutty bunch, and that was the walnuts. The findings appear in the journal Food and Function. Now, whether roasted or raw, walnuts beat the competition. Walnuts were loaded with the highest amount of polyphenols. These compounds are believed to reduce heart disease risk by lowering levels of blood cholesterol, improving blood flow, and cooling the inflammation that's been linked to heart disease. What's more, nuts which are high in fat don't necessarily lead to weight gain. Walnuts not only have the most polyphenols, but they also have the most potent polyphenols, the researchers say. Now, there are other nuts that also contain polyphenols, and after raw walnuts, polyphenol amounts found in other raw nuts in descending order are Brazil nuts, pistachios, pecans, peanuts, almonds, macadamia nuts, cashews, and hazelnuts. So those have less polyphenols than raw walnuts, but that's the descending order for other types of nuts in their polyphenol content. Well, nutrition scientists are in total agreement that nuts are a nutritious snack and food additive, providing both nutrients and antioxidants, which provide significant health benefits. We'll be back after this short break.
Would you like to live a happier, healthier, and longer fulfilled life? Then visit us at healthandlongevityradio.com. That's one word, healthandlongevityradio.com. There you'll find valuable information and resources that can help you achieve optimal health and give you the secrets to longevity. Visit us today at healthandlongevityradio.com. Once again, that's healthandlongevityradio.com. It could change your life.
Welcome back to Health and Longevity. Do you have questions about nutrition, health, or longevity? This is your chance to have them answered. On each program, Dr. Westerdahl will choose a key question from our listening audience and respond to it on the air. Due to the high volume of emails, Dr. Westerdahl cannot personally answer each question on our broadcast. If you would like to submit a question, please go to our website, healthandlongevityradio.com. Once there, you will see a button to submit your questions. And now, the question of the day.
And our question for today is, how much water and fluid should one drink daily? Well, I really recommend that you drink at least 6 to 8 glasses of water or other fluids each day. And suitable fluids would include water, of course. And I recommend drinking purified water. And really, the more optimal type of water to drink would be pure distilled water. That's the type of water I personally drink because it's the purest form of water. Pure distilled water is really the best, in my opinion. Now, there are other optimal or suitable beverages that you can have to get your fluids, and that would include vegetable or fruit juices. And that includes vegetable and fruit juices that you can really dilute with water to avoid too much sugar or too many calories. Now, many of these beverages, of course, provide additional vitamins and minerals and phytochemicals when you get the fruit and vegetable juices. Now, make sure that you avoid caffeinated beverages because caffeinated beverages promote dehydration. They actually promote the loss of intracellular fluid from the cells. And also, make sure to avoid any carbonated beverages as well.
And now, Health and Longevity's special feature, where Dr. Westerdahl interviews leading experts and personalities on vital topics important to your health and longevity.
Our special guest today is Dr. Skip McCarty. Dr. McCarty is an internationally recognized authority on stress management and is fellow of the American Institute of Stress. Dr. McCarty is former associate pastor of the Pioneer Memorial Church on the campus of Andrews University in Berrien Springs, Michigan. He was there for 25 years. He is co-author with his daughter, Dr. Pamela Litvak, of Stress Beyond Coping, a stress management and e-learning course available at stressbeyondcoping.com. Dr. McCarty has conducted stress management seminars in India, Serbia, Australia, Okinawa, Canada, and the Caribbean, as well as many locations throughout the United States. And also, I worked with Dr. McCarty in conducting a stress management seminar in Honolulu, Hawaii. And welcome, Dr. McCarty.
Thank you, John. Good to be with you again.
Skip, it's great to be with you. And first of all, I'd like to ask you, how did you get interested in developing an expertise in the whole area of stress management to begin with?
Good question. I was a young minister, and I was looking around for programs to help connect with the community and got a stop smoking program, nutrition program, and they had just come out with this was the mid-70s, they just come out with a kit on managing stress. And so I bought that kit, and I taught it a few times. I really liked it. And then I went through the early 80s, went through a very, very traumatic period of my life in which I discovered that most of the stuff I was teaching people in the stress management program wasn't helping me at all. So I began to make some adjustments to things I find were helping me, and I found that the audience was responding even better than before. And I had a federal judge, John, who came to 5 consecutive stress management programs I conducted when I was in Salt Lake City. And about the third time he came, I said, you know, this is the same thing I had last time. I was starting out kind of embarrassed. And he said, well, you added some things last time, and they were really helpful to me. And so I began to realize that some of the things I was discovering was really hitting the bullseye for some people, as well as it was for me by that time. And I began to dream about someday having a program that would be widely available to people that would that could help them with their stress.
Now, you're a clergyman, and your doctorate really is, it's a DMIN, that's a doctor of ministry, is that correct?
That's correct.
Now, we hear, of course, a lot about stress, and there's all types of definitions of stress and what it means to people. And let's be clear right from the beginning in our discussion today. What really is stress?
Well, stress, to kind of skip the technical definitions, which wouldn't be as meaningful, the stress is really our physiological and psychological and emotional response to the pressures of life. And it has a physiological component that because we have stress hormones that when we're under stress, we feel threatened by something. Adrenaline and cortisol, the two primary stress hormones, are secreted at above normal baseline levels in our body, and they elevate the heart rate. They raise our blood pressure as blood is quickly shunneled out to our extremities. Our respiration increases. We have more energy-rich sugar in our blood, and our muscle functions become more alert, and our senses are keener. At the same time, our digestive processes and things that aren't emergencies in our body, these processes that aren't emergencies, actually become suppressed because our body's responding to some kind of emergency-type situation. And cortisol also kind of enhances our immune system. So if, while we're under this pressure, we're wounded in some way, we have an enhanced immune system. It also enhances our blood clotting mechanism in our bloodstream, so that if we're wounded, that we clot quicker. So these are all benefits. It's a physiological response of our body to pressures we're feeling that are actually preparing us to either get away from it or to fight back. So that's the fight or flight response.
Okay, now this program, of course, is called Health and Longevity. You addressed a little bit of that in there, but I'd like to maybe you could elaborate on more on how stress really affects our personal health and our personal wellness, as well as possibly affect our longevity and how long we live.
It does. In fact, it can have opposite effects in that regard. When we talk about stress, we're generally talking what the experts refer to as distress. That's the harmful kind of stress. That's when our stress hormones kind of remain, they get stuck in the on position and they remain at an elevated high level. But there's another kind of stress that researchers recognize. It's called eustress. And that little word, the little preface eu, is it's a Greek preface that comes from the Greek word good. And so it's a good stress. Like eulogy is good words and euphoria, good feeling. This is eustress, good stress. And that's because we need some stress in our life in order to perform at the optimal levels and have the greatest enjoyment of life. Being in relationships is somewhat stressful. And there's a work pressure chart that has, right in the middle, it's kind of in an oval configuration on a chart. And right in the middle where it peaks out, that's what they call the eustress period. That's the perfect, that's the sweet spot, so to speak. We have just enough stress to keep us interested, motivated, challenged, but not so much that we're overloaded. And then as it drops off to the right side, it can get to the place where it's what we call work overload, and that's where you have too much. That's the distress, and that's where our stress hormones get locked, kind of stuck in the on position. But the counterintuitive thing, John, here is that researchers have found that it goes the other way as well. If we get to the place where we don't have enough stress in our life, where we get bored, there's nothing challenging us anymore, and there's really we've lost nothing to stimulate us, then we actually can the stress hormones will get activated in a similar way, and that also is distressful. And right in the sweet spot is in the middle. That's the eustress. And that keeps us going. It's like a violin. If you have a violin string isn't tight enough, it kind of has a raspy sound. If it gets too tight, it can actually snap the string. But when it's just right, you get that beautiful tone.
Well, you know, I guess it's the eustress or that good stress you're talking about. I'd like to talk a little bit more about and what can we do to really take that stress so that we can improve our health and increase our longevity?
Very good question, because it's estimated that 60 to 90% of visits to physicians is actually stress-related, not that it's necessarily a direct cause, but that it exacerbates or contributes to the medical problems that we have. And cortisol, when it's remained in an elevated state, presses our immune system, so we become susceptible to all kinds of diseases. And after I studied this for probably 10 years, just getting all the information I could find and experiencing myself, what was helping with stress and the lower stress levels to a safe point and get them back into the eustress zone, I was able to categorize those into 7 different components. And I've developed a stress pyramid that has 7 different components to it. It's the opposite of what the food pyramid is. In food pyramid, you have the most important things at the bottom. Stress pyramid, the most important are at the top. At the bottom, we have 4 components, 4 of these 7 keys to managing stress. And I call those foundational. They're foundational. They're important and they do help us manage stress. But the real power components of managing stress are at the top. They're the 3 components at the very top. 3 keys can actually convert negative stress into positive stress.
So what are those four foundational components of your stress pyramid?
We hear most about these components. The first one, of course, is relaxation. All stress programs will talk about relaxation and how important that is to kind of lowering. If you even take just a few moments to do a deep breathing exercise or some kind of relaxation exercise, you can actually lower your stress hormones for a short time even, and that can be very, very important. Humor is important. I don't know, John, if you or some of your listeners may have seen the YouTube video of the hysterically laughing baby at his dad tearing up a job rejection letter that he got. Within just a few months, it got 33 million hits.
Wow.
And that's our grandson.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah, baby Micah. And there's been so many responses to that, saying that that has helped me when I was at a difficult time of my day. I just go to that YouTube link and it just relaxes me. And even though it's just momentarily, that is so important. Leanne Jassaway wrote a book in which she has in this book what she calls the misery index.
Yes.
I don't know if you've ever had an experience where you were going through a really difficult time. You weren't even thinking anything humorous about it because there was nothing humorous about it at all. But then months later or a couple years later, you're talking about that experience and you're laughing about it. It was so crazy. Well, she says that the longer it takes between when you go through a very stressful experience and when you can laugh about it is what she calls the misery index. That's the higher the misery index. And the goal is to get to the place where you can actually be in a difficult situation and see something humorous in that and be able to laugh about it. So humor is so important to relaxation. And, of course, just even ticking, many people when they work these days, they eat while they work, eat their lunch while they work. And if you even just take time during your lunch break to actually have a lunch break, vacations, even if mini vacations for a couple of days, it's interesting that the Bible actually prescribes a day off every week.
That's right, a Sabbath, right?
Yeah, the Sabbath. They actually prescribe that. And all these are related to relaxation. And then there's exercise, and we know a lot about how exercise promotes health in so many different ways. What exercise can do for stress management is when you exercise, you actually are inducing stress. You're putting your body under stress. When you look at the physiological, you look at the charts of the physiological changes in stress and the physiological changes in exercise, they look almost identical. And so what you're doing when you exercise, you exercise for 30 minutes, you're actually training your body to begin to activate the stress system and your stress response and then to stop it at a certain time. So if you exercise 30 minutes, say several times a week, and you get your heart rate up there and your blood pressure rises and so forth during that time, and then it ends, you're actually conditioning your body that when you do into a stressful situation, not to have the hormones locked in the on position, get stuck in that position. You're training it to go through the stress cycle and then come back down again. And you also, because you have control over when that stops and when that starts, you also are without realizing it, are psychologically becoming programmed to when you get into a stressful situation, you do have control when your response being that highly elevated emergency response, when you can actually mentally turn that off and come back down again. So exercise just helps in many ways with regard to managing stress as well as all the other health components. And then we have time management and goal and setting goals, which is the 4 foundational components. And setting goals is similar to exercise in that it's the second way we induce stress in order to help us better manage stress. Because when you set a goal, if it's reasonable and desirable and achievable, it takes some. You put yourself under some stress to accomplish it, but it's a good stress. It's what the researchers recognize as a eustress. and you can kind of borrow the what it's going to feel like when you get to the end of the process and experience that along the way. So that's another good stress. And then finally, of course, is eating healthy. And I'm sure you have a lot on that in your program. But
yes.
when we have healthy eating, we're putting our body, getting our body in the best condition to help us be able to deal with any kind of stressor of life. So those are the four foundational components.
Okay, so that's relaxation, exercise, and there was time management and eating healthy.
That's it. Those are the four foundational components.
Now, quickly, you have three power components in your stress pyramids that you say may be even more important than the four foundational components for managing stress.
They are, because the power components are really where stress is resolved. The first one is what we call viewpoint. It's and that has to do with how we interpret things that happen to us. Dr. Hans Selye, the father of stress management research, said that attitude is what determined whether we perceive an experience as pleasant or stressful or not so stressful. And if we have the right attitude, he says, you can actually convert a negative stress into a positive one. And Barbara Brown wrote an excellent book on stress, and she makes a statement that stress is 90% how the mind looks at difficulties in life, and relieving stress is 100% of the way the mind uses its resources to resist the effects of stress. Now, we know that you can't just by having a positive attitude, you can't prevent some stress. And Christopher Reeve, when he was thrown from his horse, he went overnight from being Superman to being quadriplegic. He couldn't
yes.
change that by positive thinking. But after that happened to him, the way he processed it mentally and by the viewpoint and the attitude that he took and the way he filtered that through his beliefs enabled him to go on and achieve many things beyond that point instead of just going into the depression and stay there. Norman Anderson, in his book on emotional longevity, he likened positive beliefs, this positive viewpoint, to antibodies of the mind. He said it's like antibodies destroy cells and organisms, threaten our well-being. So
yes.
our positive beliefs can provide us with a defense against negative life experiences and the stressful experiences that can harm us.
Yeah.
Yes. What are the other two components?
Well, another one is, and this is exciting how it came out of a study done by Lester Breslow in Alameda County in the mid-60s to 70s, where he studied seven different health components. I imagine you've talked about those on your program before. They studied
yes.
7,000 people over a nine-year period, and they found the seven best habits were no smoking, moderate use of alcohol, no regular exercise, and 7 to 8 hours of sleep, and so forth. But what many people aren't aware of is at the same time that was happening, there was a PhD student at Berkeley who wanted to do research, who wanted to do her PhD research on the effect of social contacts on longevity. And
yes.
Her committee would not accept that. But she heard about what Breslow was doing. Breslow said, I'll let you piggyback on my research. And so she did. For those 9 years studying those 7,000 people, what they found was at the end of that period of time that those who had the most social connections died at one-third the rate of those who had the least social connections. And that was amazing. But the study went on for another 8 years beyond that. So it was 17 years that whole study went on. And at the end, they concluded that the healthiest lifestyle and gave the best chance for longevity was the seven components that Breslow had discovered, plus having close social ties. But now here was the knockout, John. They found that those who had close social ties and unhealthy lifestyles actually lived longer and died at a lower rate than those who had healthy lifestyles and lack of close relationships.
Yes, I believe that. Now, we're running short on time here, Skip, so tell us what that last component is. Just quickly tell us.
That's the spiritual component. And,
yes.
And this has been the biggest surprise to stress management researchers, the spiritual component. And the way they measure that, and there's been, for 30 years now, they've been studying this. They've done over 300 studies of this. And the way they measure it is, the only way they have to measure it is people who attend religious services and they participate in religious activities like prayer and reading religious literature and so forth, and they're active in service in through their religious faith. They have found that they have 10 to 1 more positive health than people who don't. And there's been researchers that have actually put this into 15 different health categories or like health measures like heart disease, blood pressure,
yes, uh-huh.
and so forth. and found every single one of those 15 categories, those who were active in their religious faith, came out on top.
Well, I really believe that. Now, Skip, we've come to the end of the program already with your section here. Could you tell us a little bit about how people get in touch with you? Because you have some resources. Give us your website and so forth.
We have an e-learning course that has 32 20-minute sessions in it that are divided into four modules. It's a faith-based course, and it's available at stressbeyondcoping.com. Stressbeyondcoping.com.
Give that again.
Stressbeyondcoping.com. We're giving actually free access now to eight of those sessions. The one that's in our module three, it's all about relationships. When someone logs on and they click on that, it's up at the top left part of the screen for free access to this module. They'll get 24 hours. They can look at that module free. They can go through all eight sessions if they wanted that. And then we also have a seminar kit that has scripts and CD and so forth for those who want to provide this for their community. They want to teach it to their community. And you also get that from stressbeyondcoping.com.
Well, Skip, I want to thank you so much for being with us on the program today. It went really fast, but of course, this is a big topic, stress management. And of course, through your resources, you have a lot of great information, stressbeyondcoping.com, to get more information from Skip McCarty. So, Skip, thank you so much for being with us today, and we appreciate keep up the great work.
Thank you, Jonathan. My pleasure. God bless.
And that was our interview with Dr. Skip McCarty on stress management. Now, some of our listeners have said that they have missed a show or would like to re-listen to a previous show of Health and Longevity. And if you would like to listen to past shows, go to our website at healthandlongevityradio.com. We have archived podcasts of all our previous shows. Again, you go to healthandlongevityradio.com.
To learn more about the books written by our guests and books written or recommended by Dr. Westerdahl in this program, please visit our website at healthandlongevityradio.com. There you can learn how to obtain your copy of these valuable and informative books. Search each page for yourself and see how you can live a happier, healthier, and longer life. Visit us today at healthandlongevityradio.com. Once again, that's healthandlongevityradio.com.
That's it for this week's program, and we encourage you to tune in next week to Health and Longevity. Until our next broadcast, this is Dr. John Westerdahl wishing you the best of health and longevity.
This has been Health and Longevity with Dr. John Westerdahl, a production of Life Talk Radio. Join us again next week on the same station and time for Health and Longevity. The preceding information on this program has been general information about your health and is not to be taken as professional medical advice, nor is it intended to serve as a substitute for medical attention. Do not change your diet or exercise habits without guidance from your medical doctor, especially if you have health problems or are on medication. Do not change your medications without the advice and supervision of your medical doctor. If you have a medical condition, we encourage you to seek the consultation of a medical doctor experienced in dietary change and lifestyle medicine. And as always, we wish you the best of health.